Well, the holidays are with us, and that means for most of us, time to start thinking about gift giving. And among other things today, we're going to talk about how to find a gift for the astronomy lover in your life. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Paul Kinzer, back with us. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, and he joins us a few times a year to talk about the latest news in astronomy and what we can see in the night skies. So if you have a question about what's going on in the night skies, or maybe you've got a question about what gift you are considering and want to know more about it, I hope you'll join in. Number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Paul Kinzer, welcome back.
Oh, it's great to be here as always.
Great to have you with us. The holidays are fast approaching.
Yeah, and I know that is a time of year traditionally when, you know, either a family member, often a child, has gotten the astronomy bug and people wonder about, well, what should I get? And they almost always immediately jump to a telescope. I'll get them a telescope. Or her. And that's fine, except there are lots of other things that you could get to before that if you're not sure if this is something you're going to stick with. A decent telescope is an investment. If you're thinking of spending less than $100 on a telescope, I would say do some more thinking. But for less than $100, there's lots of things you can get, binoculars or books or maybe a green laser pointer to learn the night sky together, go outside and point the pointer at constellations and share the learning. Of course, you have to be really careful with lasers at night. Shining them in an airplane or anywhere else other than the stars is a bad idea. But that's just one idea.
And, you know, books, I mean, you're an author and you like books.
Yeah, I'm sure. And my wife is a librarian, so yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have some books you recommend for listeners?
Yeah, one that a lot of professional astronomers, when asked what book really turned you on to the night sky, they mention a book called The Stars, A New Way to See Them by H.A. Ray. He wrote all the Curious George books, the children's books, but he was also an avid amateur astronomer. It's a great book for introducing you to the naked eye night sky, constellations. Why does the sky change over time? Why are the planets here now and there later? And very, very approachable language and whimsical and nice drawings and things. Very nice book to get. Another one for maybe a little more advanced person who maybe has a pair of binoculars already or even a small telescope, is the Pocket Sky Atlas from Sky and Telescope magazine. I like it. Oddly, it is not a pocket sky atlas. It's called that, but you'd need a mighty big pocket for it. It wouldn't go in your shirt pocket. It's, I suppose, 7 by 9 inches, but it opens up and it has very nice maps of the night sky arranged in a very sensible way. So that's sort of a step up from that.
All right. Let's talk telescopes for a minute. You made some comments about telescopes, but what advice do you have for anybody thinking about purchasing a telescope as a holiday gift?
Well, part of it really does depend sort of on where you live. If you're going to be in the city all the time, there isn't, and using it in the city, you'd probably want something pretty portable. And it wouldn't need to be really big because, frankly, in the city, there are so many lights that it would be difficult to see the dimmer objects up there. And the thing about a telescope, it does make things look bigger, but a main and very important thing is it makes dim things look brighter. And if the light pollution where you live, and it's a very common thing in even not very big towns, if it's going to keep you from seeing dim galaxies and things like that, and maybe you're going to be limited to looking at the moon and the planets, which is fine, then you don't need a very big telescope. But if you do live out in the country or you have a place where you could keep something, you might want a larger one. But, of course, the bigger they get, the more they cost. One that I have actually looked through now that I think is a fine beginning telescope, it's $200, and people might think that's steep, but I don't think you can get a better telescope for anything like $200. And it's called the Astronomy Without Borders One Sky. Astronomy Without Borders is a nonprofit organization that helps bring astronomy to people around the world to help make connections between different peoples just by sharing the night sky, which we all share. Mm-hmm. I mean, people in anywhere at our latitude around the world, they see the exact same sky we do just a few hours later or earlier. And there's that telescope, the One Sky. It's a reflector telescope, so it uses a mirror to make things look bigger. It's very portable. It's bigger than some in its sort of price and ability range. It's got a mirror that's more than 5 inches across, and the diameter of the mirror lens of a telescope it's kind of its main selling point. The bigger the mirror or lens, the brighter objects will look, and the more you'll be able to see because of that. It's got a 130-millimeter mirror, which is a little bigger than 5 inches, and that's pretty good. It comes with two eyepieces, and a lot of scopes at that level only come with one. It's very easy. I watched a video just the other day on it coming in its box, and almost you just pull it out of the box and you can use it. Very, very easy to use. And nearly half that $200 price goes to support that organization. And I'm not, you know, I don't get paid by them, but it's made by a company called Celestron. And kudos to them for they're making no money on this. They're all of the extra profit, I guess you'd call it, goes to this organization. And a nice thing, there's a lot of support for it out there. There's a website called cloudynights.com, and there is a thread on that forum that is many hundreds of comments, thousands of comments long, of people who own this telescope and little tweaks they've done to it to make it even better than it is. But very easy to use, maybe all someone would need. And it's a tabletop telescope on a lazy Susan to spin it around, and then just a pivot to go up and down. Very easy to aim. And it even slides together so that it becomes smaller for easy transport. It's got a handle on it. You just lift it. It's very, very nice telescope.
And what's the name again?
It is the One Sky. That's two words. One Sky Telescope from Astronomy Without Borders. So it's often called the AWB One Sky. And
That sounds great.
Yeah, and you would order it probably directly through them. Only people in the United States can order it. Strangely enough, this organization trying to help people internationally, you can only order it that way, and there are reasons for it. But it's a great thing.
Well, we'll take some calls as well. Number's 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions. Brad in Williams Bay just joined us. Brad, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I have a homemade telescope that has quite a large diameter mirror in it that I bought from a friend. But the mirror, the silver on the mirror is in very bad condition.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, where could I send the mirror to have it resurfaced with a new
Resilvered, in other words, yeah.
Right. First of all, there are still people who use silver, but for the most part, it's aluminum now. And I guess my answer to that would be there are so many places that I couldn't tell you one specific one, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. If you did an internet search for recoding telescope mirrors, there are many, many places. And that website I just mentioned, cloudynights.com, there are lots of different forums there, beginners or reflectors or whatever. There's lots of them. And just posting a question there, you'd get a lot of answers. Or just doing a search for mirror recoding, you'd get many, many, many results. I know there's one called Spectrum Clausing, C-L-A-U-S-I-N-G. I believe they're right out of Chicago, so not very far away. Lots and lots of them.
Okay, that's very helpful.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised how, I guess, for what you're getting, how inexpensive it is. It's going to cost some money, and it's all based on how big your mirror is. But I think for what you get, it's a pretty reasonable thing. Somebody hand working on your mirror, taking good care of it, and making it a much better thing.
Yeah.
I think it's about 8 or 9 inch, and I think this was part of a kit made quite a long time ago.
Right.
That, and it has a name on it, Deep Sky. Does that sound familiar to you, or is that?
Frankly, no. But there were over the many decades, there have been many, many different companies, some of them very large, some of them very small.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Brad. Appreciate it. Jim in Northwest Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Yeah, oh, hi. That's Northeast Wisconsin, up near Door County.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. First off, that One Sky Telescope sounds intriguing. I think I have the Celestron equivalent in their 130. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, I would have probably opted for that. Quick question on that One Sky. What about the mirror? Is that pretty durable so that you don't have to try to collinate it?
Well, you will have that. Is one of the disadvantages of a reflector is the mirrors need to be collimated, which means you need to line up the main mirror with the secondary mirror and then also line it up with your eyepiece. I don't own one of these telescopes, but the fellow who in my club who does says he had been surprised how well it holds its collimation. It's also, some of them you need tools to adjust the mirrors. This one you can do easily with your hands. It's short enough that while you're looking through the telescope, you can reach those knobs to turn. So, I've heard good things about it.
Mm-hmm.
Good. The other thing was a book suggestion. I had gotten the book a number of years ago. I think the title is roughly Backyard Astronomy, and it's the Vatican's astronomer. That's the only thing I can remember him. A brother guy.
Yeah.
Casmiolano. I know who you, yeah.
We can talk some more about that particular book. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guest, Paul Kinzer. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at the night sky today and also talking about holiday gifts for either the veteran or the budding astronomer with our guest today, Paul Kinzer. He's the author of a great book, as a matter of fact. It's called Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's also a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club, and he comes by several times a year, and we talk about what's going on in the night sky. Questions for him, either about the night sky or about books or other gifts, telescopes maybe, binoculars. I hope you'll join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Paul, just before we broke for news, we had a caller asking or kind of recommending a book, and we didn't get into it. So
right. The book is Turn Left at Orion. And it's, I think it's 100 or 101 objects to look at in the night sky with your telescope, but not just with your telescope. It also shows what it might look like through binoculars, through low power telescope, a high power telescope, and it's written again in a very friendly way. And if you're wondering, well, I've looked at the planets, I've looked at the moon. Now, what do I look like? Look at that's it's a good book, and it's from the publishers of my book, Cambridge University Press, and I know it's one of their best-selling astronomy books. It's a very good book to get.
Yeah.
And not, I always feel odd tooting my own horn, but my book is all about what we're talking about today. It's both about what is up in the night sky, in a very basic way. What is a star? What is a planet? How do I find them? What is a galaxy, a star cluster, things like that? And also, how do I choose a telescope? Do I want a telescope? Maybe I don't. Maybe I only want binoculars. How do I choose? Why do I choose? What can I choose? And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and with some beautiful photography in there as well.
Well, thanks, because all the photos in the book are by me. So
yeah, they're wonderful. So, and your book, again, Stargazing Basics.
Yeah.
Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Lindy, in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Lindy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have an 8-year-old grandson. In the past couple of years, I've purchased a couple different telescopes because he's interested in the night sky.
Yep.
But they're cheaply made. Not that they're inexpensive, but they've just fallen apart and worth. And I've tried to research it, and I would just like some good advice on that.
Wow. You sound like someone I paid because that's you know, the introduction to my book, that's exactly what I talk about. In fact, there's a photo in the book of a telescope I paid $100 for, and I could not believe, and I bought it deliberately for the book. And then I returned it because it was absolute junk. But it cost $100. And looking at the box and looking at the ads for it, it looked just as good as some of the others, but it wasn't. So sadly, there are junk telescopes out there. And the really sad thing is even some well-respected companies that make fantastic higher-end telescopes, they also sell junk. And that's too bad. I just don't get it. I think it's a bad business model. The one I mentioned, the OneSky, I think is right on the cusp. It is not an advanced telescope, but it is a fine. It's a perfectly fine telescope that's easy to use. There is plastic in it. That's what, you know, can help keep the price where it is. I do have another suggestion that's a step up from that. That one was $200. For $269, there's a telescope called the Orion SkyQuest XT6 Classic. That's a long name, but it's also on the same kind of mount. People call it the Dobsonian mount, but it's a very simple mount that you move the telescope by hand. That's part of the reason the telescope can be as inexpensive as it is. It has a 6-inch mirror, much more metal in it. It only comes with one eyepiece. That's one reason it's only $269, but it is, I'm sure there are a lot of people who bought one of those and they never wanted anything more.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then,
what's the name of it again?
It's Orion Telescopes and Binoculars is a mail order company out of California. Again, I don't work for them, but they specialize in telescopes for people who haven't done astronomy before. Mm-hmm. They have good customer service. And I've bought things from them, and when there's been a problem with them, boom, they take care of it right away. So that's a good thing, too. And it's the SkyQuest. That's their line of Dobsonian-mounted reflectors, and it's called the XT6 because it's got a 6-inch mirror. Classic. They have newer ones that have doodads added, electronics and things that maybe might make them more usable for certain folks, but it also makes them more expensive. So, and then one more, if I can, there, if you want to share the view, if you want to look at something for a long time, the Dobsonian mount isn't really the best mount to get because the Earth spins. We spin around a full circle every 24 hours. And if you're looking at something and you're magnifying the view 100 times, you magnify that motion too. So if you're looking at the moon, you can watch it just cross your eyepiece. You know, a step up from that is a motorized mount, but that's going to give you a step up in price too. And sadly, I think the worst problem with beginner telescopes are the mounts. And the mount is the thing that the telescope rides on. It doesn't necessarily mean the three legs of a tripod. It means the thing that it mounts on that allows you to move it. And even some okay ones come on mounts that are just too small for them, and they're not sturdy enough. So you look through the telescope, and it bounces all over the place.
Yeah, that was one of our experiences.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so to me, frankly, the cheapest mount that you can put a motor on so that it follows the sky, and if you don't put a motor on it, then if you line it up right, you only need to turn one knob, you know, if you don't have a motor. That just makes it easier to use. The cheapest one that's sturdy, and it's called an equatorial mount because you line it up with the equator.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the Celestron again makes this, and it's their Omni, O-M-N-I, XLT 102 refractor. And a refractor is a telescope, unlike the others I've talked about with mirrors. It's the classical one, the one you usually think of that uses a lens. And it's $500, so that is quite a leap in price. And that's without a motor, but you can get a motor for it for less than $100. But if you did do that, then you could have it, you could aim it at Jupiter or whatever, turn the motor on, and then it would stay aimed at Jupiter for, you know, you might have to do little adjustments, but if you've lined it up right, you might not. I mean, I have a telescope permanently mounted in an observatory that I never have to touch the thing. I aim it at something, and it will stay aimed at it all night long.
Yeah. So there are different prices there. But
Yep. You go up in price, but you also go up in maybe ease of use and sturdiness and
quality
and satisfaction.
And to me, all three of these avoid the problems of many, many beginner scopes. And those problems typically are flimsy construction, a very small, you know, a lot of times they have a tiny mirror or a tiny lens that just won't show you much, or bad eyepieces. That's another thing. They'll come with an eyepiece that's basically a glob of glass. And none of the scopes I've recommended so far have those problems. That's why I'm feeling okay about recommending them.
Well, I'm feeling like this will be on his Christmas list again.
Yay. Well, I'm sorry you've had to try again and again.
Yes, I have. Thank you. I really appreciate
sure.
it.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. And Linda, you probably aren't the only one that was helped with that conversation.
Yeah, I sometimes think there would be more than twice as many people out there looking at the night sky, except that they went to a store and bought a piece of junk and then gave up.
Yeah.
I did for 20 years. I gave up.
Yeah.
And it's too bad.
Rodney in Little Chute, it's your turn. Hi, Rodney.
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Oh, a while back, I bought a Celestron 8. And it has the automatic switches, ball, Praxis guy.
Yep.
Is there any way of hooking this up to switching the lens out and hooking it up to a laptop?
You mean using an eyepiece that will show you what you're looking at on the screen?
Correct.
Yes, there are eyepieces that do that. I don't have one in mind, but yes. And if you did a search for that, you could find it there. There for years and years, you could easily get video eyepieces where you'd hook it up to a TV. And now those have switched over to, they're basically a little video camera inside that you can hook it up to your laptop. And then there are other cameras that you can actually take the video of it and then use free software to process that video for one really great still image. That's a skill set you have to learn. But as far as just looking through a telescope, I'm pretty sure Orion, again, they sell one. But if you did a web search for...
would you call it?
I'm not quite sure what you would call it. a digital eyepiece, laptop eyepiece. I'm sure there is a term, but I'm not thinking of it right now.
Yeah. But
sorry,
you got him on the right track,
yeah.
I think.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks, Rodney. And Kathleen in Fifield, we'll go to you next. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello there, Larry. Listen, I would love to have a telescope, but I'm a one-handed person, and I'm wondering if it can be kept, once it's set up, if it can be kept, under a roof, but at least, in the elements, outdoors. I mean, it wouldn't get rained on or snowed on, but can these things be left out, or is there some protectant you can put over them that would work, or can you not at all?
Right. Yes. I through my school district and my astronomy club, we built an observatory, and it's got a roof that rolls off, but there's no heat in the building. There's no cooling in the building. And we just keep the telescopes covered. You know, you have caps over where you put the eyepiece in. You have caps over both ends of the scope. Some people just use shower caps, you know. What you said, though, the issue is you don't want them exposed to rain and snow and things like that. Although some people even do that. They just put basically a big tarp over it and leave it outside. But to me, you're going to get mold and critters and things like that.
Oh, sure.
In fact, having it out in the elements, then you can go outside and just take the cover off and use it or pull it out of your garage or whatever. If you don't, if you keep it in your house and it's, you know, 80 degrees warmer in your house on a winter day than it is outside, it's going to take the lenses or mirrors a while and the air inside the telescope to reach the same temperature as outside. And until they do, you're going to have pretty messed up views.
Oh, I see. So you're almost better off keeping it out there than if you
put it out there. If you can keep it in a, you know, in a garage, the fumes from your car and all that, mm-hmm. and some people say they have an effect, but I don't know.
I have a screen porch attached to the garage, and the problem for me would be if I want, you know, wanted to move it out, you know, to be going up and down steps from the house, that type of thing would be a problem.
I think you'd be fine.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling.
And that was a great question. I haven't had that very often.
No, that's a wonderful question. Let's go to Ron in La Crosse next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I wonder if your guest has ever heard of the Mercury Mirror Telescope. It's probably not something an amateur would want to build because mercury is rather toxic. But they have one up in British Columbia, and they Wisconsin Public Radio a few years ago had a guest from the British Astronomical Society. And he says what they do is they put a pool of mercury on a rotating platform, a turntable, and they can spin it at various speeds. And the mercury, the centrifugal force displaces more mercury to the edges of the pool, and then, of course, it forms a concave surface.
Yep.
And by changing the revolutions per minute, you can change the focal length of this reflective mercury.
Yeah, I have heard about that, and it's cool, but the problem is it can only be aimed absolutely straight up because the you know, it has to be parallel to the gravitational pull of the Earth.
Right.
So it can only
use a mirror or a prism.
Yep, they can, and they do, and I'm sure what they do is they then have to move the secondary mirror around. You know, there's a very large radio telescope in Puerto Rico, Arecibo, and it's just a big hole in the ground that has a reflective surface. Yeah, it's a neat idea, and you're right. There's no way that any of us will ever be able to have our own. I had someone knock on my door and come in and say, you need to give me your mercury thermostat right now. And they gave me an electronic one. They said, no, mercury's got to go. It's so deadly. But it is a neat idea.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Still some time. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. A few days ago, a meteor, a fairly large one, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in Scandinavia, or a Scandinavian country, I think.
Yeah, you mean, and they caught it on video?
They caught it on video, mm-hmm. and it was a large one.
Yeah, and I have trouble now keeping up with those because with all of the surveillance and just regular traffic video cameras out there, they're catching lots and lots of video. I think there was an American city in the last few days, too, that there was a video that caught a very bright fireball, you know, where it's not just a streak of light across the sky, but it's a streak of light that suddenly gets brighter as that meteor is burning up in the atmosphere. Fascinating stuff.
It was part of a meteor shower.
Ah, probably the Leonids. The Leonid meteor shower peaked just a few days ago, and it's an annual shower. We call them meteor showers when certain periods where we get a lot of meteors because we're passing through the path of a comet. And a comet is a big ball of ice and rock and dirt going around the sun. And as it goes around the sun, parts of it melt and fall off. And then every once in a while, we'll go through a debris trail. There's another one coming up soon, the Geminids meteor shower. It's coming up in mid-December, and this year it's going to be a good one because the moon, which can really wash out the light of meteors, it'll be getting smaller. And the night of the 13th of December and the morning of the 14th, there's going to be the Geminid meteor shower, and you can see up to 120 meteors per hour.
Wow.
If you're really lucky and you hit the peak just right. But,
Wow.
Yep.
So what else is going on in the night sky?
Well, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. My favorite objects to look at in the night sky are the winter objects. I drive home into the east every night from work, and now it's dark when I do because the days are short. And there in the eastern sky are the Pleiades. The Pleiades is a star cluster that right now it's rising. It's already up in the sky as it gets dark. It's a really beautiful thing to look at in binoculars. With your naked eye, it's just a little blob. With my terrible naked eye, it's really blobby. But some people, they see a little tiny dipper of about six stars. But if you look at it with binoculars, you can see dozens of stars. And then following it in the sky is the V-shaped face of Taurus the Bull, the constellation Taurus. And that V-shape has a name. It's also a star cluster called the Hyades. The interesting thing about that is there's a bright star in it called Aldebaran, and its name means the follower because it follows the Pleiades across the sky. And after Taurus comes up by 9:30 right now, Orion, the brightest constellation in the sky, has risen in the east. And it's a beautiful thing to look at, the Orion Nebula. Nebula is a word, a Latin word that means cloud or mist. It's a, also, you can see it with your naked eye as a sort of gray haziness, but if you look at it with binoculars, again, again, binoculars and telescopes, they make dim things look brighter and bigger, but brighter is what you really want for a dim thing like a nebula, and it's a beautiful thing to look at.
We had, I watched 60 Minutes on Sunday, and there was a piece on what is the space ship that we sent out 40 years ago?
Oh, Voyager?
Voyager. Yeah, there was a nice piece on...
Yeah, I missed that.
It was worth a look because it... just the fantastic nature.
Yeah. Yeah, the two Voyager spacecraft, I think, maybe changed our view of the solar system more than anything else. And that's kind of saying a lot with the Hubble and things like that. But when they went by the outer planets, we need to look back. Now we can get pictures even through backyard telescopes because of digital technology that far exceed any pictures we had gotten of Jupiter or Saturn or Uranus or Neptune. Far exceeds what we could get in the 60s and 70s until the Voyagers went by them and we saw just how amazing those planets are. And then, of course, they were followed by the Galileo craft that orbited Jupiter for years and the Cassini that orbited Saturn. And just a couple of months ago, they crashed it into Saturn. They burned it up on purpose so it wouldn't damage what might be the life on some of the moons of Saturn. So amazing.
And I thought the funniest or the most interesting part to me in a way was they were that first Voyager, was it? They were going to go send it, and at the last minute they realized they needed some additional protection. And they for a piece, and they didn't have anything, and somebody said, let's just put some aluminum foil on it. So they actually, the guy's wife had some aluminum foil.
Oh my gosh, I have not heard this story. That's amazing.
And it was told by the guy who was a young man at the time and involved in it. And he says, so they have some aluminum foil right out of the grocery store that is still working.
And it's further away than Pluto. That's amazing.
Oh, it was a really wonderful, wonderful piece. Well, here we are, out of time.
Yeah, it goes quick.
It goes really, really quick. And I want to thank you so much, Paul.
Sure.
For being with us. A great holiday gift ideas, and it was fun talking with you about the night sky.
Well, and I just hope people look up. Go out and look up, because it's there every night. And it's one thing I always like to say is if you have kids, there's nothing that's going to turn them on to science more, I think, than getting them outside and looking at the sky, because even though they might like dinosaurs more, the dinosaurs are all dead.
Paul Kinzer is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. He'll be back and we'll talk with him again. Tomorrow we'll take a look at indigenous cooking with our guest who wrote The Sous Chef. Stay with us.